Hey, welcome to Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. I'm your host, Stephen Kent. Twice a month, we're bringing you the tips, strategies, resources, and the news and trends you need to effectively market your law firm. This week, we're returning for part two of our roundtable discussion to finish our conversation about some of the major challenges facing the legal marketing industry in 2017. Before we get started, if you're not familiar with LaFleur, we're a full-service legal marketing partner that works with law firms across the country and in a wide range of different practice areas. To learn more about what we can do for your firm, just visit LaFleur.marketing. That's LaFleur.marketing. All right, let's get back to our roundtable and reignite the discussion in this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. Okay, so returning to the podcast this week, we have our eminent roundtable panelists from last week. We have our content director, Dave Vandewa.
Hey, Stephen.
We have LaFleur president and founder, Chip LaFleur.
Stephen.
We have, all the way from Portland, Oregon, the illustrious Kyle McCarthy, our managing editor.
Nice to be back.
And finally, we have our project manager, Fallon Peters.
Hey, Stephen.
Okay, so just a refresher on where we're at. Last week, we kicked off our roundtable discussion on the challenges facing the legal marketing industry. And we're talking about a particular article that was published in Forbes by a writer named Larry Alton. And the title of the piece is The Challenges Facing the Legal Marketing Industry in 2016. And so the first of those challenges that we talked about, and we devoted pretty much all of last week's conversation to it, is a lack of client education. So now we kind of want to move on from that. And we want to talk about the second challenge that he details in the article. And that challenge is attorney pushback against content. And I think this is something that we can all attest to as being a challenge and something we really deal with as a day-to-day part of our reality. And so specifically in the article, he cites the perception that networking effects are the only tactics that successfully bring in new business. So in other words, attorneys thinking that their word of mouth, the cases they get from referral and, on-the-ground networking is the only way they really get new clients. And I think in particular, this is something we've talked about a lot because we have a lot of clients who their digital marketing efforts, are showing the analytics results that we want to see, in terms of elevated traffic, better bounce rates, better engagement, even, form fills and leads, chats, all the things. But, they may come back and say, okay, that's great, but, I haven't actually, gotten a client from you guys, an actual case result. And so how do we deal with that? I'll turn to you, Chip, because I feel like this is something you can speak to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is my, so if we have a client come to us and say that, then I think we have a client educational opportunity for one thing. The new clients that we brought on have said that, or have come in and said, hey, I've always got my cases from referral. And, I think that's really where we should be paying attention, putting forth a lot of effort. Maybe I should hire a marketing assistant who can go do more networking and things like that, which is, of course, fine. I think networking is one of the best ways that you can get new business. But there's only so much time in the day, and you can only maintain a network of so many people. And with the tools that we have right now, really what you're doing is you're just taking your existing networking and you're building this leverageable asset on top of that, so that your network can actually expand exponentially. Because, shooting somebody an email is networking. If you can stay in front of people and talk to them, and really have something that's customized for that person, that addresses them by name, all those things are part of networking. And every single ingredient or every single element of networking carries a little bit of value of face-to-face getting together for lunch. Has a very high value, right? A quick phone call has maybe a little less. An email has maybe a little less. An email newsletter maybe a little bit less. But the thing is that you can send out thousands or tens of thousands of email newsletters, and you only have 5 work days a week where you can meet up with somebody to grab lunch. So even if the individual impact of one piece of this networking is smaller, you can do so much more of it. And so, especially for clients that we really have embedded with and that we've gotten to know well and help build up the marketing automation side, we've really increased that degree of communication, and staying in front of people. You know, almost every client we've had has said that the number one bar complaint against attorneys is lack of communication. And we solve that by creating, you know, 20 plus email campaigns, 20 plus email drip campaigns, where the person expresses interest in the firm and they get 15 emails. Then they hire the firm and they get 10 or more different emails that are unique to that situation. So we consistently, you know, for the firms that we survey with, you know, they consistently get, you know, 10 out of 10 in terms of client communication. So that's not just making sure that you don't get a bar complaint, because, I mean, we have to get, what, a 1 or a 2 to get a complaint? Yeah, these are 10s across the board. Well, you guys are really communicative. Those people, in turn, because they had this positive experience, that part of it was part of that positive experience. They're going to refer more clients. So, you know, I'm all for tracking in every way that we can do it, but some things are just less trackable, especially if we're going to help a firm grow by referral. That referral network should increase, and you should start seeing exponentially more cases come in. We've seen that, you know, with especially with the clients we worked with the longest, and sometimes they are hesitant to give us credit for that. but the degree of growth that we've seen with some of those firms just goes beyond what they'd be able to do year to year. And then we look at the data behind the email open rates and who's looked at that, and then where they get referrals from, and it makes a pretty clear picture.
An email is a very easy thing to forward to. So you send an email newsletter once a month to your list of past clients and other attorneys, and forwarding that email to somebody else, again, expands your network just exponentially, even beyond your personal email list.
Right, and I think we have to bring up social too, which is, you know, even more so. You know, people are going to share that content, you know, especially if you put out meaningful content on social. And, you know, this kind of ties into something I wanted to bring up in the last point, too. You know, I think a lot of attorneys, you know, push back a little bit at gearing their content at millennials and at younger audiences. You know, they think they have an older demographic and, you know, they're used to that, and they want to kind of do things in a traditional way to serve that demographic. But, you know, at this point, millennials are no longer, you know, this young, really up-and-coming generation. I mean, we're almost all millennials in this room, and I'm 32. You know, I'm getting to the point in my life where I'm going to be in the prime years where I'd most likely need legal service, you know, probably between, we'll say, 40 and 60. And I think a lot of that audience is going to be there within the next 10, 20 years. So, you know, when it comes to, either when it comes to content marketing, you know, through social, or when it comes to your blog, when it comes to, you know, the content on your website, you know, these are just going to be increasingly important. And I think a lot of attorneys just tend to underestimate, you know, how quickly that audience is going to become, you know, the primary audience, moving away from Generation X and boomers, you know, millennials really being the go-to audience that's going to drive law firms' growth.
I think you're exactly right. I think attorneys have a sort of confirmation bias because things have changed so drastically in the last 10 years. We have a few statistics. I'm actually working on an ebook for us here at LaFleur, and this is one of the statistics that I was really fascinated by, and that in 2005, 65% of people who were looking for a lawyer asked a friend or a family member, right, first. That was the first thing they did. In 2014, about 10 years later, that had gone down to 29%. So it's less than half just in 10 years. And of course, in opposition to that, internet was the dead last in 2005 for people preferred the yellow pages to the internet, in fact, for searching out an attorney's services. And in 2014, it was up to 38%, which was the highest of all of them, right? And I would suspect, based on the data that we've looked at, that consumers on average, about 90% of them, the first thing they do is, you know, to find a service of any kind or a product of any kind is search the internet. And whether you're getting a lot of referrals from word of mouth or you're getting referrals from other attorneys, they're looking at your website before they make that phone call. Mm-hmm. I guarantee it. I guarantee your next potential client has looked at your website before they made that phone call.
And millennials are emotional buyers. That's been proven that they make decisions based on how connected they feel to your brand, what good things you're doing for the community, and how you put your brand and yourself out there. So that all falls in line with being on social media, blogging in a voice that is approachable and understandable and relatable, you're usually in a state of panic or distress or something when you go to a lawyer and you need a lawyer. So I think, you know, that's not just a millennial thing, but I do think, like you're saying in those statistics, they're going to do the research on their own. They might do some confirmation with family members or put out on Facebook, has anybody ever worked with so-and-so with a group of friends? But I do think that they're a generation that tends to do their own research, find somebody that they like, and then maybe confirm later.
I feel like every day, doesn't Facebook now have a... I'm not very Facebook savvy, but Facebook now has like a recommendations feature. I'm looking for mm-hmm. recommendations, right? I feel like I see one of those every day. I'm looking for recommendations about where I should take my kids this weekend, or I'm looking for recommendations about who I should take my car to. And I would dare say I will very soon see I need a recommendation about which lawyer I should talk to.
It's almost a bit of a moot point in that I believe that to some extent we already are reaching out to millennials. Just kind of by default, because, for instance, if I'm speaking with an older relative, like my grandmother, for instance, or even my mother, and if they were to need any help with anything in the legal spectrum, I would probably do their research for them. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of younger people, people under the age of, you know, 40 years old or whatever, that are much more comfortable with the internet and that are more tech savvy, are already doing a lot of this work on behalf of a lot of their friends and relatives. So I don't think it's going to be a question of reinventing the wheel. Probably kind of more of what we've been talking about as far as looking for new mediums and then maybe just tweaking the message.
And what people say online and people's web presence can turn the tide in one way or the other. You can get a referral. Someone can refer or say, hey, this guy's the best attorney ever. You go look them up. Their site is from, you know, the early 2000s, and it's about like 300 pixels wide with terrible graphics. And someone will see that, especially young people will see that and say, no way. Like, this guy doesn't have his act together enough to make a decent website, you know? And doing that is not the hardest thing in the world anymore, you know? I mean, even if you're just going on a Wix and throwing something up that looks good, you know? You're going to be better positioned than to have something that's ancient. And so the standard has really changed. The expectation is, you know, if you're successful, you should represent yourself as being successful. And that's really kind of gets to one of the core things that I think we set out to do when we started doing this. You know, certainly, you know, the direction that Dave has brought us to and the work that he's done, you know, and everybody else too, but kind of at the outset, Dave was the one who started doing this, was like, we're not going to fake it, right? Like, we're actually going to create this stuff built around our clients who we believe in, and we'll tell the story of who they are. And so that sincerity and genuineness comes through, especially, I think, to people who are used to living and breathing, you know, everything that's on the internet. I think the other thing that's there that's a huge thing too is, you know, reaching young people. A tremendous amount of content now is consumed via video and via podcasts and things like that. And there, I mean, you have this very, very unique opportunity of actually getting yourself, you know, especially the principles of a firm, actually out there so people can see and hear your message and hear what you have to say, what you sound like, what things you're passionate about. And that's, you know, you can't fake that, you know, and so especially for some of our clients that are very charismatic and do great in front of an audience, you know, and that's not everybody, you know, video is not a perfect medium for everybody should just, hey, we should just all go do video. But if you're good in front of a camera and you sound good and you can be sincere and really make a case, just assuming you're an attorney, you can do that, then that can be just have a huge impact. You know, stories about how you were successful in a case with a client, hearing from that client, talk about, you know, here's what they did for me, or then here's answers to questions, because we're making another huge shift. You know, Alexa, what should I do if I've been in a car wreck? Well, Alexa's going to tell you the answer there. So you need to have those answers out there. A lot of people are going to just say, you know, what's an attorney near me? You say on your phone. the phone gives you an answer. And so, you know, a lot of attorneys have the opportunity at this point in time to really kind of take over the spaces. But it's still the advantage to the people who start doing it first and aggressively.
That speaks to reviews as well. I think that getting good reviews and having a lot of good reviews is going to only boost you in that Alexa, Siri, Google world of tell me who's best, who's the best lawyer around me. They're going to go straight to the reviews. So getting those client reviews, having those client testimonial videos is just hugely important.
And that also ties into millennials as well and how the people's thought processes have changed, that people now trust the internet just as much as they trust a friend or a relative. You know, they said, 89% of people trust an online review, an anonymous online review, just as much as they trust a friend or a family member. And so got to search those things out and get ahead of them, not just for the automation side where algorithms are going to say, oh, you got a lot of really good reviews, so we're going to put you on top, but also because people who are looking for you or happen to find you are going to see those reviews too and go, oh, you know, a bunch of people said that they really like this firm and I trust them just as much as I would trust someone close to me.
And they're getting good at spotting fake reviews.
Oh, definitely. Too,
right?
Yeah.
Like you read through and you go, okay, this is the same voice, you know, different comments, same voice. This is the same person doing it versus, you know, this is this huge swath of demographics, you know, coming in from all over the place and they all have different things to say. There may be a theme running through it. So your people are getting better at that too. So all those things just come back to that center point into that kind of founding principle of let's be authentic about what we do.
Okay, I want to move on to the third challenge here. While we still have some time to devote to this. This has been a great discussion so far, but it's been really robust. So I want to move on to the third challenge here. And the third challenge, the way the author articulates it is, he titles the section, Out with the Phone Books, In with SEO. And the way he puts it here is, he basically says, rather than and this is in quotes, simply trying to gain visibility, today's legal marketers and advertisers must be more strategic. It's about gaining visibility and then cashing in on this platform by using the right language, resources, and content. But he kind of doesn't elaborate too much there on what the right, quotes, right language, resources, and content are. So how do we as marketers make that determination? And in general, how do we balance SEO with making sure that content, you know, has that strategic value, has the strong potential for conversions, and how do we go about that, do you guys think?
Honestly, Stephen, I think you could talk a little bit about one of the recent, how we do this keyword analyses and how that informs our approach to content as far as what exactly we're strategizing around as far as phrasing and everything else.
Right, that's very true. One of our recent clients that we took in, we did some extensive keyword research for them, more so than we had for past clients. And one of the things that we tried was, you know, we had a series of core keywords that we came up with that were basically, you know, central branding keywords that we were going to use in a recurring manner throughout their content. But the keyword tools, you know, also give you a lot of other long tail keywords to work with. And, you know, what we found is we can kind of repurpose those keywords that aren't, you know, they're too specific to be central kind of branding keywords. But we can use those to drive blog topics and other forms of content on the website. So, you know, some of the ones that we found were surprising. I'd have to look at the keyword list, but they were things that were family law related. Like, you know, we found that there was quite a bit of traffic around domestic violence related searches in that area. So, you know, that in addition, and the client expressed that as a wish too. So that made us, you know, gave us a pretty strong idea that that would be an avenue to present the things that clients in that audience, you know, are searching for.
I think it comes back again to, you know, if you have authentic stories to tell and if you have, you know, worthwhile information to share, start with that before you even start worrying about organic search and SEO specifically. You know, when people go see a play, like, they don't show up and then the actors show up and kind of guess and figure out what they're going to put out there, right? It's not worth going into. There's preparation that goes into that, and there has to be, before you have an audience, you should have your ducks in a row. What would be worse than pushing a site out and having a big ad campaign, say, to drive traffic to that site and pay a bunch of money for display traffic to build this brand, and then you get to this website and it's flat and there's nothing there and it's made terribly and there's no good content to read. On the flip side, maybe you start out with a website that's not very good from a technological perspective, but you really devote some time to create useful content. You bring in a team to do that, or you know, even as an attorney, I mean, it's an investment in time, but you spend the time to create that and you make it a habit to do so. Maybe you do that for 6 months. You've got 6 months worth of content. Now you say, well, I've got this. I've got all this content here, but the vehicle that it's sitting in isn't as efficient as it could be. Well, now move up to a nicer vehicle. You know, move up to a vehicle that can handle it, that can do better in organic search, but now at least you have something that's worth searching and that's worth serving up. So start out with the content, generate good content, put it on a bad site if you have to, put it in a Word doc, you know. It's great to get it out there so that it can get indexed, and then we can redirect things later on down the road, but start with that first, and then worry about SEO sometime later. And don't worry about SEO. I don't generally think of SEO as like a primary tactic, you know, like it should be there, you know, we should do all the right things on the website and make sure that all the content that's created is optimized for a search. But start out first by telling the story and helping people with answers to questions that they need. And then when you get down the road, you know, consider doing some SEO, because everybody else out there is doing SEO.
Definitely.
And there's only so many top positions in search.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're all out there doing the same thing, you don't differentiate yourself by providing good content. You're not going to outperform somebody who's spending three times as much money as you.
Right.
So try to get the traffic that they're not paying attention to, that they're not focusing on as much. You do that by having content that covers a broad range of topics that are still centered on that center point.
I think, too, what you're getting at is this idea of an iterative process where you start with the core foundation of really good content. We recently had a new client sign on with us who had a similar kind of situation where they had really good content, pretty decent content on their website, but they missed the forest for the trees and didn't have any mention of their, I think we talked about this in the last
one. Yeah, we did.
They had no mention of where they were. You know, their address, the city they were in, the state, you know, they just sort of missed that one core. And that's just one very small thing that you could do to improve your SEO. So they had a great core foundation. And so SEO can be iterative. And I think that's more of what this guy is mentioning. One of the challenges is that I think lawyers don't understand the importance of the fact that so many people find them online. And they may find them through organic search or from social or from reviews on these different platforms. And so I think lawyers kind of miss out on that understanding. And then once they get around to it, they think, oh, I need to do this and this and this and this and this. Well, again, you got to kind of work your way up there. And sometimes it's low-hanging fruit, like you've got really good content, and then you're just missing one or two little things that are going to make it pop and make it show up where it needs to. Other times, you got garbage content, and you got to start all over from scratch and start reworking those pages. Sometimes you got a really bad website. It just doesn't look good. You need a better website.
And we've seen, too, that, you know, just visibility isn't everything. You know, just even if you did get great results from SEO, it's so easy to have a ton of traffic and have it not be meaningful traffic, you know, to have a high bounce rate, you know, to have people, you know, coming but not filling out forms, not doing the things that you really need them to do, you know, to gather more information and start, you know, really using some powerful marketing tactics to communicate with them. So if your content isn't there to draw people in and create that engagement, you know, all the SEO in the world isn't really going to do you any good, even if you could use tactics to just jack it through the roof, which you really can't anyway.
Well, what's the most expensive thing, right? I mean, the most expensive thing that you're going to do on your site is get the traffic there, right? Because you either pay for it through paid search or you pay for it by having an SEO campaign to get it there. So before you make that big investment, you know, I would say build up all of the other things that are going to get you there, which is, you know, which starts out with content, but also comes into, you know, building out some things around call to action and make sure that you have the landing space before, you know, you put forth a lot of effort. And, you know, we don't put a huge priority on SEO in general, because it's not always the cheapest way to get traffic. And so it's easy to lose sight of how expensive good SEO can be. I mean, you can spend $1,000 a day on a link building campaign pretty easily. And firms are out there doing that, you know, but they're not doing that as a first step. They're doing that once they know that their website converts, once they've done some A/B testing to make sure that it converts well, Once they've maybe even, you know, shown it to a test audience or a focus group to get feedback, then they start ramping up. You know, maybe they spend a, you know, who knows what it could be, but I mean, a few thousand dollars on a daily basis to do, you know, really, really, really high-end SEO. And there's value in that because that traffic converts well because all the other things were figured out first. So, you know, do the things that you can do with the budget that you have before you start pouring money into getting traffic to your site.
And I would say that really good content is the sort of sleeper way of outmatching your competition who's got 100 times the budget that you've got. We've got a website that we launched, and within 6 months, it was number one, page one of Google for its primary keyword. And the site doesn't have much domain authority, doesn't have tons of links coming to it. It's got really good content. It's got diversity of content. It's designed well, and it did great. We're seeing this more and more, that Google's getting smarter and smarter about these things where people are taking advantage of, say, link building. And so they'll write out to 1,000 places that maybe don't have any relevance whatsoever. So you might have 17,000 links to your site. But I know in our search, like when you search legal marketing, there's one page that's right below us that's got 17,000 links. We don't have 17,000 links, but we're ranking better than them. And so you have to sort of parse all that out and think through what's the most important thing. And that's why I think what we've been getting at here over and over again without really saying it is the content is the most important thing always. That good foundation of content is going to take you a long way. And then you can boost that with other strategies.
Just to put a neat bow on that idea, that it's called search engine optimization. It's not called search engine fundamentals or search engine baseline. So that's kind of what we've been getting at here this whole time, is that SEO is a wonderful thing, but it's also kind of this super sexy term that everybody seems to be falling in love with and rushing out to spend a bunch of money on without beforehand, you know, setting up really quality structures in place from a holistic standpoint across the board with the fundamentals that will take most law firms a long way on a smaller budget. As far as, you know, pouring money into this concept of SEO, which again is valuable, but it's the kind of thing that happens towards the end of the process and definitely not towards the beginning.
Okay. I think we've got to wrap up here, guys, but I think this has been, you know, a really informative discussion. I've had a great time and I hope you have too. So I want to thank Dave, Fallon, Chip, and Kyle all for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
Thanks, my pleasure.
Okay. That's the end of our two-part roundtable discussion, and we hope you found it as stimulating as we did. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a conversation about branding featuring LeFleur's branding specialist, Jane Newton. As always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lefleur.marketing. See you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LeFleur.